Hi, family. My name is Deanna Manatic. It's truly an honor to be asked to share my experience, strength, and hope, and I appreciate and thank the committee for asking me to come out and share. And it's no coincidence that my home group has walked the walk. So when he said the title of the meeting, I was like, oh, please, this is perfect. But let me make this clear right up front. This does not mean that I've walked the walk since I got here. So just so you know, I'm not the poster child for how to do it the right way or, and you know, the perfect way. All I can share with you is how it's been for me and how I've stayed here. So I don't go into my story. I can tell you I got here. I was 21 years old. I was a crackhead, and I was a mess. I didn't know I needed help. I thought junkies were the ones that, you know, had needles hanging out of their arms, and, you know, alcoholics were the ones with the brown bag and the bottle living in the street. I didn't have any previous exposure to any 12-step fellowship, except for my brother went to a different one, and he had constantly left these pamphlets on my bed whenever I would pop in at my parents' house. And they always went right in the trash, and I was like, yeah, that ain't me, and I'm not like you. And but anyway, so when I found Narcotics Anonymous, it was no surprise to, you know, anyone around me that I needed help. It was a surprise to me because I thought I was okay. But I ended up with a meeting list, and I was living in Greenbelt at the time. I had just gone back to my parents' house after a year and a half of being MIA, and I had asked them if I could move back home because I had nowhere to go. My boyfriend at the time had put me out when I told him I had a problem with crack. And he said, well, I smoke pot, and that's my thing, and I don't know nothing about crack, so you got to go. And I remember him saying that this puzzle, all the pieces fit now that he heard that I had, you know, an addiction to something other than marijuana, because that was his thing. So he said, you know, all the pieces make sense. You know, all those times when I didn't come home and all those stories about where the money went and, you know, all the lies that I had told, everything now made sense to him. But when I went back to my parents, you know, I had that whole crackhead look, sunken eyes, and, you know, just a hot mess, quite a bit smaller than I am now. And my mom said that I could move back home, but I had to follow their rules. And her first thing that she said was that I had 30 days to clean up my act. And I don't know where in those 30 days, but somewhere in those 30 days, I met a member of Narcotics Anonymous who said that I looked like he used to look, which totally baffled me because I thought that meant he used to be a girl. I wasn't too sure where he was going with that. But he ended up reaching in his car and he pulled out his medallion and he handed it to me. And I share this all the time when I share this part of my story. You know, he handed me this coin and I thought it was from Spain. I was like, I don't know what he's leading up to. But he told me that he goes to Narcotics Anonymous meetings and he used to shoot dope. And I remember saying to him, I haven't done that. I don't know nothing about that. I said, I just smoke crack. And like it's like a lighter, easier drug. So he said, well, I'm going to give you a meeting list and just do yourself a favor and just give it a try. And, you know, I'll share this just because it's part of that story. You know, I ended up going home with them and, you know, I got more than a meeting list, which was okay because I wasn't a member yet. So it wasn't, you know, people can say it was a 13th step. All I know is that I ended up with a meeting list, got laid and ended up in a meeting a couple of days later. So the good thing was I didn't get high that night, right? So I went to Laurel Hospital and I went in this meeting and I was all decked out for a club, right? Because I didn't know, I had no idea. Like, he didn't tell me how to dress, right? He just said show up. So I was wearing this little black leather miniskirt, and this was back in the day, so this is a few, you know, the big hair. I always talk about the big hair because it was in the 80s. And so I show up to this meeting and I stuck out like a sore thumb, you know, the mini skirts, the spikes, the, you know, going to the club look. And you could tell, like, the women in that meeting were just like, yeah, she's new. So the good thing is that they embraced me, right? They had tried to come up to me and I wasn't having it. So I like made a beeline for the door and I left and I went to that club and I had my last night out. And this is significant for me, that when I went in that room in the bar, it was where all my friends had hung out for a long time, and they all dressed just like I was dressed that night, and none of them were there. They must have had, like, some special night for deadheads, and everybody that was there was wearing tie-dyes and had dreads, and it was not my group. And so I did my, like, three drinks real quick and, you know, try to get the mood going. And when I didn't see anybody I knew, I just left, and that was the last time I used. And that was March 4th, 1988. So, So the important thing for me is that I went back to that same hospital the next day, and this is significant to me, especially if you're new. I toned it down a notch. I still had the big hair. I put jeans on instead of the mini skirt. I didn't have to stand out as much this time. But when they gave out the key tags at the end of the meeting, you know, the night before, I was like completely like, oh, hell no, that I'm not doing that. But this night, you know, something clicked. And I don't know what was said. I remember the speaker was a good-looking dude, and I was like, okay, so they got some hot men here. You know, I can do this for a minute. And that same guy that gave me the meeting list wasn't there. I think he was shocked that I ended up going to meetings at all. But anyways, they were giving out the key tags, and they said, here's a white key tag for surrender for any part of 24 hours or just a new way of life. And coming from where I came from, you know, I didn't really have nothing to lose. What was it, you know, just trying it, just for the moment. So I made that walk, and I say this, and it's silly, but I felt like that whole Joan Rivers, come on, crackhead, you know, and I'm like, oh my God. I couldn't believe that y'all were clapping because I was a crackhead. That didn't make any sense to me. But it was warm and it was welcoming and it was loving. And those same women that were there the night before approached me again because I guess they saw my willingness to get up there and get that key tag. And they gave me their phone numbers. And I still have that phone book today. And on that first page, there's four phone numbers. And I went out to my car and I put in parentheses their four descriptions. One was pregnant, one had Coke bottle glasses, one had curly blonde hair, and one was really, like, beautiful. And I wrote that down in my book. And today, one of them's here. And at the time, she had 2 years clean, and now I think she just celebrated five, and the other three are dead. And that's the reality of our disease. That's the reality of what happens if we don't walk the walk. And when I said that I haven't done this perfectly, what that means is, like, the fact that I've stayed here, what I've done perfectly for 27 years is I haven't used. But, you know, when y'all said don't get in a relationship, I don't know about anybody else. I'm sure this is many of our experiences, but it's mine specifically. I said, well, maybe that's your thing. I know I can do it, right? I've had a few relationships in my day. I can handle it. And I remember, like, the first guy that broke my heart, I think we dated for 30 days, and he was done with me. You know, and when he dumped me, I was like, well, wait, I think that's the first time I've ever been dumped. That is not okay. And I'm like, so then I became like a stalker for a minute, and that lasted a little while. But, like, I didn't want to do everything that y'all said. I said, you know, I would pick and choose, and I heard, and I justified this, take what you need and leave the rest. So that meant for me, take what I want and leave the rest. It didn't mean whether it was good information or not, you know, consider taking it on. So what I ended up doing was I had a few, you know, little fun relationships, whatever you want to call them. And when people said, you know what, you need to get a sponsor, I said, well, I'll get a sponsor when I'm ready, right? I'm not jumping the gun here. And 7 months later, you know, the bottom was falling out. Like, I was on that fence. Am I going to stay or go? And there was some real significant things that happened in that first year where I remember driving to a meeting, and I remember going around this one bend on Kenilworth Avenue where I lived, and I remember this telephone pole, and I just kept saying, you know what, just hit that sucker, they'll find me sometime later, and who the hell would, you know it, and nobody would be able to help me, and I would just check out. Like, I know that feeling of desperation clean, right, not working on anything, and just feeling so desperate that things haven't gotten good enough because I haven't done enough work where I was ready to check out. And thank God, a God intervened that I didn't know at the time and gave me that willingness to keep going on that road to get to that hospital meeting. And so there's been a lot of times like that where I wasn't sure what to do, you know, and I knew what my predecessors had told me. When you get to that point, there's going to be nothing between you and your God. So go ahead and just make the best of it, pray, and ask for help to get to the other side. And many times when I literally would sit on my hands just so I wouldn't make a bad choice, you know. And sometimes the choice that I would make would be to call a man. You know, sometimes that choice would be to eat a whole bunch of stuff I shouldn't be eating. When I was smoking, I would, like, chain smoke just to feel like I was going to stuff it for a second. But what ended up happening for me was after sticking around and at 7 months I got a sponsor, they said, go to meetings and listen to the women that share and find somebody who has what you want. And I always say this because I didn't know whether I was relating to the drug habit or if I was relating to, you know, the house they lived in or the boyfriend they had. And people explained it to me. And the woman that I ended up choosing to be my sponsor, she talked real slow. She only smoked one cigarette in an hour. And I was like 3 and 4. She didn't get up and get coffee, and she didn't get up and go to the bathroom. She sat still. And when she talked, you could see that she had peace in her life. And I wanted that because I was a freaking train wreck for like the first few years, not just the first 7 months. But I asked her, and she told me that she would call me after she checked with her sponsor, and she agreed to sponsor me. And what I can tell you is, aside from the fact that I've been clean ever since, and I thankfully only had to get one white key tag, I've got a healthy fear of having to get a second one. I got a home group. I had that home group for 6 years, and then I ended up moving, and I got another home group, and I've had that home group ever since. That is Walk the Walk, Friday nights in Laurel at 7:30. And it's a great home group. And what I can tell you is that I go to that meeting and I share openly about what's going on with me. I don't, you know, candy coat anything. I don't sugarcoat, you know. Life is life, and life shows up, and when it does, you know what? Thank God I've got a foundation, and I share a lot of cliches and a lot of analogies because that's what worked for me. You know, some people, like myself, have to see things in my mind to understand what you're saying and how you're explaining it. So when people would talk about building a foundation on sand at the beach and the storm comes, that, you know, your foundation is history. But if you build it on concrete, you know, with all of your help, I know that if the storm comes, I'm going to be okay. And that's been proven to me time and time again since I got here. I got married at 7 years. I got divorced at 14 years. I did some pretty cruddy stuff in between there. I found myself at 14 years clean, completely spiritually bankrupt, completely forgetting that I should check in with God on a regular basis. And I started living not like y'all taught me how to live here. You know, pretty much reverting to how I used to live when I was using. And that wasn't cool. What I did do was I continued to go to meetings on a regular basis. And for me, back then, regular was 7 meetings a week. And it didn't matter if I had 14 years clean. But I knew that, you know, I was only one bad decision away from using. So what's happened for me is that I was able to get with God after that, where you find yourself, and I don't know if this has happened for you or not, but it happened for me right about 14 and a half, 15 years clean, where I was completely desperate for God to help me. And I was completely open like a raw wound, needing help or I was going to die. And when we talk about the still suffering addicts, don't forget, we can be in here with clean time, right? And when somebody tells you they're fine, or here, this is even better. If you ask somebody how you're doing, if you ask me how I'm doing, I hope you have 5 minutes. Because, like, this whole, how you doing? You know, how you doing? Well, I didn't even answer you, and you kept going, you know. Truly, if you want to know how I'm doing, sit still for a second, and I'll be honest and tell you how I'm doing, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I've got nothing to hide. My life is an open book, and I've said to people for years, if you want to know how I live and how Narcotics Anonymous works in my life, follow me home. Right? Today, I got married to this man that's incredible, and just sometimes I even wonder, like, my self, low self-esteem creeps in for a minute, and I say, how did I get this lucky? Because, like, this man loves me no matter what. And before we got married, we had a couple kids. I decided to do things a little different this time, or backwards, I should say. But, like, I'm a freaking awesome mother, and I've been wanting to be a mom since I was 15 years old. And doctors had told me for 6 years and documented that I would never bear children. And what I learned through you all and other mothers in recovery and other fathers too is that I was able to have children when I was ready to accept the responsibility of parenthood. And thank you. And that was a big deal for me because, like, I thought, you know, it was just as easy as getting knocked up. I didn't think it came with anything else, right? So what's happened is, you know, both of my children were born with, you know, medical issues, not anything major. My daughter was born with one functioning kidney, and my son was born with a club foot. So both of them in early, you know, My daughter was born Friday at noon, and I was in the meeting downstairs at the hospital that evening at 8 o'clock, the survivors group in Annapolis. Like, I know, y'all put me on some drugs because you did a C-section. I need to be in a meeting because I know people have shared in meetings about using, you know, prescription medication and relapsing behind it. And I told you I have a healthy fear of that white key tag. So I knew, you know, my husband thought I was crazy, but I was like, no, I want to go to a meeting. Pretty sure, you know, wheelchair or not, people are going to just hug me and love me anyway. But after she was born, they took her, you know, for a minute, and they took her to another floor to check on her and do some, you know, stuff. And I thought, you know what, thank God that I had God in my life at the moment, because, like, how do you just take this baby I've been carrying for 9 months and leave out of the room with my kid? It really, like, it messed me up for a few minutes. And thank God that, again, that foundation kicked in, and you know what? Leave the professional work to the professionals. I'll take care of the rest when they bring her back. And then we went through, you know, enough different medical stuff with her for a little while. And then when my son was born, you know, he ended up having to get a cast on his foot and a new one every 2 weeks. And I'll never forget the doctor said, well, all we're going to do is going to take a scalpel and we're going to cut his Achilles tendon. And I'm like, when are you going to do that? He said, right now, put him on your lap. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm alone, I'm at Hopkins, this is not, no, this is a little much for me. And he said, it's fine. I'm like, okay, trust the professionals. So they did that, and then I remember going down from Baltimore City calling my mother in hysterics, they just cut his leg open on my lap. And, you know, my mom was like, I'm sure it wasn't that serious. But and it really wasn't, because I ended up just putting this little special Band-Aid on it, so it didn't even require stitches. But, you know, he ended up being fine, and he can walk and run, and you can still tell it's a little messed up. But, again, because of the foundation that I built in here and the trust that I have in my higher power, I knew all I had to do was keep showing up and doing the right thing. And really, like, I can't tell you enough how thankful I am that I watched my predecessors with their children and learning what to do and what not to do. Like, I have my own little opinions about some kids that are a little wild, and that's completely okay. It's my responsibility to ask them if I can help. There's been many times when I've shown up to meetings, one specific meeting, and I would have a coloring book and crayons in my purse just in case that sweet little girl who had a little more energy than me needed some help and the mother needed to get a meeting. So again, that's like my responsibility to help another newcomer or somebody else. So I always just participate and do the best I can do. And a couple years ago, in December, our 8-year-old at the time, our daughter, was diagnosed with leukemia. And again, walking the walk, because I was able to come in here and build this foundation and have this life of recovery. And it was well past 14 years clean, thank God. I rekindled this relationship with my higher power. And I couldn't tell you in days about this relationship. You know, I know that I had what I believe to be an unshaken faith. You know, when people said, how do you respond to that? How do you get through that? And I said, you know what? I believe that everything happens for a reason. I believe that God gave us the gift of her having this diagnosis because he knew that our marriage could withstand it, because most marriages don't withstand a critically ill child. And I knew that, like, I have an unbelievable network of people that love me no matter what. They showed up. There was people at the hospital within the hour of us getting there. There was people at the hospital so I could go to meetings sitting with her. And as hard as that was for me, like, this is where I had to leave it up to not just the professionals but my network and say, like, I don't know. One of my biggest things is I don't like asking for help, right? And I know that self-sufficiency will kill me, so I had to learn how to ask for help. And I just said, you know what, I'd like to get to a meeting. It's been 3 days, and I'm feeling a little squirrely. And, you know, you watch all this different medication that they're giving to your kid, and you see all these things happening over the course of time, medically what happens and physically what happens is sickening. And as a parent, it's like, hold on a minute. You know, you want to take it from them and you want to do it all so they don't have to go through it. But again, I left it up to the professionals that knew better than me. And as a mother, all I knew was that the only way that I was going to support her and get through that was if I took care of me and my recovery first. Like, when we talk about putting our recovery before everything else, let me tell you, that is some true stuff. Because if I thought, it's more important that I care for her than care for my recovery. I'd have been taking those pills that she was taking, not the chemo. I would take the other stuff. But so the reality is, if I don't take care of me and walk the walk, I'm not going to stay clean. I'm not going to be able to be a good mother. I'll be a divorced person. The kids will be with their father, and I'll be stuck, right? That's the reality of what's going to happen if I don't work this program, if I don't let this happen in my life every single day. When I've worked the steps, and I've worked them a few times, what I've learned each time is a little bit more about incorporation, putting it inside of me, not just writing it on paper. You know, I can write for days, I can talk for days, but actually incorporating it into my life and understanding what that means. You know, when I think any of us that like talking, like me, can talk all day long about recovery and life and what, you know, we've gotten and what we can do and what we aspire to do. But when the rubber meets the road, like, what are you going to do when the bottom falls out? You know, and because I've been through that situation with our daughter being, you know, diagnosed, I knew that because I had a God bigger than any freaking cancer or anything else, I knew we were going to be okay. You know, I've had multiple friends, you know, diagnosed with different types of cancers and illnesses, and you know what? They all do the same thing. They turn to their God and they say, I know you're bigger than this. And that's how I choose to live today. That's not just then. That's not just once in a while. That's every day when I wake up. I know that God's going to show me what I need to do, introduce me to the people I need to be introduced to. Like, I know that I don't ever want to get to a point where I feel better than. When I go to meetings and there's a newcomer, I want to approach that newcomer and give her my phone number and welcome her. And if this is your first convention, welcome. We're so happy you're here. This is a big deal, you know. And if people didn't remember my name when I was new, you know, my first 30 days, I always said, when I heard somebody was going to be celebrating an anniversary, I would announce it whether I was going to be there or not. If I knew them or not, I was announcing their anniversary because I wanted y'all to know I was Dion and I was an addict. I didn't want to be, you know, falling through the cracks. And who was that girl that used to come to this meeting, you know? So the whole idea for me is, you know what, just like it says in our literature, if I don't give it away, I'm not going to be able to keep it. If I don't help the newcomer, I'm not going to be here to show them that we can get more than 30 days clean and live, you know, a good life. We can live, and I often say the sky's the limit, just like people say about our, you know, our six-month key tag, the sky's the limit. You can do anything in here you want. And my suggestion, what worked for me is getting grounded, living this way as best I could a day at a time. And when I stopped living this way, to talk about it, to get reconnected with that God of my understanding, that today is the most incredible relationship I could ever hope for. Because, again, you know, I don't know what my plan is. I don't know what God's plan is for me. So I know every single day that I show up, sooner or later, you know, it's going to be my number is going to be pulled and it's going to be time to go. And I know that at that point, God's going to know and I'm going to know that I've done my job, whatever that was to do, right? So, again, like, I'm so excited, and I always am when I go to meetings to meet newcomers and just say, you know what, welcome, because this is where we all get our start. We've all been at that one day spot, right? Whether you were there anxious to go up and get the key tag or whether you were in the back going, oh, hell no, not tonight, maybe another night, you know. I don't know where you were at when you were new, you know, but I know that if I don't remain green, remain teachable, and do this every single day to the best of my ability, but again, this isn't perfect. Like, I will never epitomize a perfect way to work this program. I have yet to meet anybody who does, and I don't know that there is such a person. You know, we have some predecessors that have done this the right way, and we have a lot of predecessors who have done it the way that they thought it was supposed to be done, and they're not here anymore. You know, I often talk about the NA thief. You know, you come here, you get yours, and you go to another fellowship. Well, you know what? That ain't cool. You should be here to show the newcomer you can get 10 years and still keep coming back to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, right? And my brother, at one point in his recovery, ended up going to church, and I said, you know, I don't know about you, but, like, anything you want to add to your recovery is cool, but, like, he exchanged one for the other. And one day at Thanksgiving, he was drinking a glass of wine, and I said to my mom, what's up with that? You know, this dude tried to kill me when I was using. He was using. I don't think he should be drinking. And she says, well, it's easier for him to drink a glass of wine once in a while than explain why he doesn't. I said, well, that's bullshit, because we're sitting here and we're failing. Like, everybody in that room knew what he used to do and why he got clean. So the fact that, you know, she was saying, well, he didn't like explain it, and I'm like, you know, we all knew. Well, he doesn't need to be drinking. So, again, I use other people as an example of what not to do, right? I don't want to graduate from Narcotics Anonymous. I know recovery is a process. I always say my license plate says recovering. I've had it since 1990 on my trucks, and that is a process. It's not going to happen overnight. I hope that when I end up going in the ground, I hope I have one of those eternity medallions that said I stay clean the whole way, right? Because it can be done. So again, I really am thankful to be able to be here. I'm grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, for you all, and for the committee asking me, and I'll keep coming back. Thank you.